Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Oral Complaints and Retaliation Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 22, 2011, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Kasten v. Saint-Gobain Performance Plastics Corporation. The question in this case was whether an employee's oral complaint to his employer, in which the employee alleged violations of the Fair Labor Standards Act, was conduct protected under the anti-retaliation provisions of that act. In an opinion delivered by Justice Breyer, the court held by a vote of 6-2 that oral complaints are conduct protected under the anti-retaliation provision of the Fair Labor Standards Act. Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Alito, and Sotomayor joined Justice Breyer's opinion. Justice Scalia filed a dissenting opinion in which Justice Thomas joined, except for footnote 6. Justice Kagan did not participate in the consideration or decision of the case. To discuss the case, we have Elizabeth K. Dorminey, who is of counsel with Wimberly, Lawson, Steckel, Schneider, and Stein, P.C. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Dorminey.
This is Betsy Dorminey, and I'll be reading to you today about Kasten v. Saint-Gobain. The Fair Labor Standards Act prohibits an employer from discharging or in any manner discriminating against an employee who has filed any complaint about activity allegedly violative of the Act. In Kasten v. Saint-Gobain, 2011 Westlaw 977061, decided March 22, 2011, the Supreme Court ruled that this protection extends to oral complaints made to one's employer, not just complaints presented in writing. Kevin Kasten claimed that Saint-Gobain, a plastics manufacturer, fired him because he had made oral complaints to management. Kasten complained about the location of company time clocks, which he said deprived employees of compensation they were due for time they spent getting ready to begin work, in violation of the FLSA. The circuits were split as to whether complaints needed to be in writing to trigger the Act's protection. The Fifth and Ninth Circuits had found that oral complaints were covered. The Tenth, Eleventh, Sixth, and Eighth Circuits had held that informal complaints were covered, but the Second Circuit had found that an informal complaint to a supervisor was not sufficient to trigger whistleblower protection. The District Court had entered summary judgment in favor of Saint-Gobain since Kasten's complaint had not been in writing, and the Seventh Circuit affirmed following the Second Circuit's rule. Kasten petitioned for cert, and the Supreme Court reversed. Justice Breyer wrote the opinion for the majority. He began by quoting the statute and then examined Webster's Ninth Collegiate Dictionary and Funk-Wagnall's Dictionary for definitions of the word file. Next, he examined the ways in which legislators, administrators, and judges have used the word file in conjunction with oral statements, uses of the word in other legislation and in regulations, the context in which the word, or a variant thereof, appeared elsewhere in the FLSA and other legislation with anti-retaliation provisions, and concluded that there was no basis for limiting its meaning to written documents. Finding that, quote, the text taken alone cannot provide a conclusive answer to our interpretive question, close quote, he then examined the remedial purpose underlying the FLSA. Noting that in the era when the FLSA was adopted, many workers were poorly educated or even illiterate, he concluded that requiring complaints to be only in writing would be inconsistent with Congress's intent. The court also noted that this broader view was congruent with that of the Secretary of Labor, who was charged by Congress with enforcing the law, and was reasonable and not inconsistent with the statutory language. Finally, Justice Breyer recognized that the FLSA also serves to give an employer fair notice of when an employee is lodging a complaint, and not just letting off steam. Justice Breyer found that the requirement of causation offered sufficient protection. quote, "It is difficult to see how an employer who does not or should not know an employee has made a complaint could discriminate because of that complaint," close quote. The Seventh Circuit's judgment rejecting Kasten's complaint because it was not in writing was reversed. Justice Scalia, joined by Justice Thomas, dissented, saying he would have affirmed the Seventh Circuit. Like the majority, the dissent commenced by quoting the statute, but then took the position that the anti-retaliation provision does not apply to complaints to the employer at all, but only to complaints made to a court or government enforcement agency. Justice Scalia did his own work with the dictionary, citing Webster's New International Dictionary, the Cambridge Dictionary of American English, and the Oxford English Dictionary. But Justice Scalia focused not on the word filed, but rather on the word complaint, which he took to mean a grievance addressed to a court or enforcement agency, not just an expression of job dissatisfaction addressed to one's employer. He noted that, quote, "every other use of the word complaint in the FLSA refers to an official filing with a governmental body. It is one thing to expand the meaning of complaint in Section 215A3 to include complaints filed with an agency instead of a court. It is quite something else to wrench it from the legal context entirely to include an employee's objection to an employer," end quote. Justice Scalia returned to the dictionaries to examine what complaint means in the context of filed, and further noted that the FLSA, as originally drafted, did not create a private right of action for retaliation, which further suggests that the protection should be limited to those who seek official remedies, not those who merely mouth off to the boss. He observes, not without irony, that, quote, "the jurisprudence of this court has sometimes sanctioned a living constitution, but it has never approved a living United States code," close quote. In the end, Justice Scalia says, deference to the Secretary of Labor is inappropriate here because the statutory language is unambiguous and the Secretary lacks specific authority to issue regulations interpreting the anti-retaliation provision of the FLSA. In a footnote, the majority is further castigated for its fuzzy thinking on deference generally. The most interesting aspect of this otherwise fairly narrow case is the emphasis that both the majority and the dissent place on words and their meanings. Statutory construction has come a long way in the past 30 years. Had this case come before the Warren Court, the analysis might have begun and ended with the spirit of the law. Even if Justice Scalia didn't win this round, he has been largely responsible for the revival of text and plain meaning in statutory construction. Next to the Constitution, every justice needs a well-thumbed dictionary, or two or three, within easy reach. This is Betsy Dormany. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.